ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री यदु उवाच नोता नोत्साहे जरसा स्थानम हातुम अंतरा प्रापत्य तव अविद्या अविदित्वा सुखम ग्रहम वैत्रश्रयम् नैति पुरुष। ट्रांसलेशन बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिदान स्वामी प्रभुपाद। यदु रिप्लाइड, माय डियर फादर, यू हैव ऑलरेडी अचीव्ड ओल्ड एज ऑल्दो यू आल्सो वर ए यंग मैन, बट आई डू नॉट वेलकम योर ओल्ड एज एंड इनवैलिडिटी, फॉर अनलेस वन एन्जॉयज मेटेरियल हैप्पीनेस वन कैन नॉट अटेन रिनन्सिएशन। परपर्ट, रिनन्सिएशन ऑफ मेटेरियल एन्जॉयमेंट इज द अल्टीमेट गोल ऑफ ह्यूमन लाइफ। देर इज अ लॉन्ग परपर्ट। देयरफॉर द वर्णाश्रम इंस्टीट्यूशन इज मोस्ट साइंटिफिक। इट एम्स एट गिविंग वन द फैसिलिटी टू रिटर्न होम बैक टू गॉडहेड, विच वन कैन नॉट डू विदाउट कंप्लीट रिनाउंसिंग ऑल कनेक्शन विद द मेटेरियल वर्ल्ड। श्री चैतन्य महाप्रभु सेड, निष्किंचनस्य भागवत भजनो मुखस्य, वन हु वांट्स टू गो बैक होम बैक टू गॉडहेड मस्ट बी निष्किंचना, फ्री फ्रॉम ऑल एफिनिटी फॉर मेटेरियल एन्जॉयमेंट। ब्राह्मणी उपमस्य आश्रम, अनलेस वन इज फुल्ली रिनाउंस्ड वन कैन नॉट एंगेज इन डिवोशनल सर्विस और स्टे इन ब्राह्मण। Devotional service is rendered on the Brahman platform. Therefore, unless one attains the Brahman platform or spiritual platform, one cannot engage in devotional service. Or in other words, when a person engaged in devotional service is already on the Brahman platform. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevita so gunan samtityayatyan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. According to Bhagavad Gita 4:26, one who engages in full devotional service, who do not fall in the any circumstance, at once transcends the mode of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. If one attains devotional service, therefore he is certainly liberated. Generally, unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation. Varnashram therefore gives the opportunity for gradual elevation. Yadu, the son of Maharaj Yayati, explained that he was unable to give up his youth, for he wanted to use it to attain the renounced order in the future. Maharaj Yadu was different from his brothers. As stated in the next verse, Turvasus Kodhyat Pitra Druhyus Chanusse Bharate Pratyacharur Adharma Ja. Maharaj Yadu's brother refused to accept their father's proposal because they were not completely aware of dharma. To accept order that follows religious principles, especially in order of one's father, is very important. Therefore, when the brothers of Maharaj Yadu refused their father's order, this was certainly irreligious. Maharaj Yadu's refusal was, however, religious. As stated in the 10th canto, Yadoscha Dharma Shilasya, Maharaj Yadu was completely aware of the principles of religion. The ultimate principle of religion is to engage oneself in the devotional service of the Lord. Maharaj Yadu was very eager to engage himself in the Lord's service, but there was an impediment. During youth, the material desire to enjoy the material senses certainly present, and unless one fully satisfies these lusty desires in youth, there is a chance of one's being disturbed in rendering service to the Lord. We have actually seen that many sannyasis who accept sannyas prematurely, having not satisfied their material desires, fall down because they are disturbed. Therefore, the general process is to go through the grihastha life and vanaprastha life and finally come to the sannyas and devote oneself completely to the service of the Lord. Maharaj Yadu was ready to accept his father's order and exchange youth for the old age. because he was confident that the youth taken by his father would be returned. But because this exchange would delay the complete engagement in devotional service, he did not want to accept his father's old age, for he was eager to achieve freedom from disturbances. Moreover, among the descendants of Yadu would be Lord Krishna. Therefore, Yadu was eager to see Lord's appearance in his dynasty as soon as possible. Yadu refused to accept the father's proposal. This was not irreligious. However, because Yadu's purpose was to serve Lord, because Yadu was a faithful servant of the Lord, Lord Krishna appeared in his dynasty. As confirmed in the prayers of Queen Kunti, Yadu priya yasya narvavre, Yadu was very dear to Krishna, who was therefore eager to descend in Yadu's dynasty. In conclusion, Maharaj Yadu should not be considered a dharma jana, ignorant of religious principle. As the next verse designates his brother, he was like the four Sanaka Chatur son who refused the order of their father Brahma for the sake of better cause. Because the four Kumaras wanted to engage themselves completely in the service of the Lord as brahmacharis, they refused to obey their father's order, which was not irreligious.
I'd like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas present to empower me to make this presentation. I would briefly like to discuss the story how King Yati was cursed. So it so happened that King Yati, by the will of the providence, married Devyani. Although he was a Kshatriya and Devyani was a Brahmani, who was the daughter of Shukracharya. When Shukracharya gave his daughter Devyani in marriage to Yayati, he warned him that he should not have union with the maid servant Samsrita, who was given in marriage to with Devyani. Actually, she was the friend of Devyani, but there was some episode because of which she became the maid servant of Devyani. But in spite of this warning, King Yati had union with that maid servant, and when Devyani came to know, she complained about this to his father, Shukracharya. Shukracharya was very furious and he told Yayati that you are a very untruthful fool, you are lusty after women, and you have done a great offense, great mistake. Therefore, I curse you that you be afflicted with old age and invalidity. And hearing this, he prayed to Shukracharya that I have not yet satisfied my lusty desires with your daughter Devyani, so please give some concession. And then the concession was given that if someone who is in youth can exchange his youth with your old age, then you can again regain your youth. And getting this benediction, he approached his son Yadu, and the reply is here that he is not willing, he is not welcoming his old age, and he refused to accept because the reason is given here, that unless one satisfies his lust or his material enjoyment or desires, one cannot actually renounce perfectly. So two reasons are given here for refusing to obey his father's order. One is in the purport, and one, as has been explained by Prabhupada, one is in the shloka itself, and one as had been explained by Prabhupada in the purport. The first reason given was, I do not welcome your old age and invalidity. And if I accept your old age, then I can't enjoy material happiness in this world. And if I cannot enjoy, then I cannot renounce the world perfectly. So Srila Prabhupada explained in the purport that actually the renunciation of material enjoyment is the ultimate purpose of human life. And the second reason which Prabhupada gives in the purport is that Yadu was a great devotee of the Lord, and he was eager to see the Lord's appearance in his dynasty. And therefore he wanted to perform complete devotional service and free from all disturbances. Because as he said that unless I satisfy my material happiness, enjoy material happiness, I cannot renounce. Therefore he wanted to say that without all disturbances, I want to engage in the complete devotional service of the Lord. And so this was the second reason. So on the plain reading of the verse, when Yati says, when Yadu Maharaj says that unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation. If one plainly see the meaning of this verse or plainly read it, it appears that it gives us a license to enjoy. And we will see when my enjoyment is complete, I will think of renunciation. This is maybe a general interpretation of this verse. But what is the spirit of this verse, we can see from the purport of Srila Prabhupada. So we see that whatever what Bhagavad Gita says and what apparently this verse says, there appears to be a contradiction. So what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says time and again, very forcefully, very emphatically, that one should control his mind and senses. One should free himself from all sense gratification, because sense gratification is the greatest enemy and impediment for self-realization. And then about the lust, he says, that lust which is seated in senses, mind and intelligence is the greatest enemy of the living entity, because it covers the pure consciousness of the living entity and it is never satisfied. And in Manu Smriti it is said that one cannot satisfy the lust by any amount of sense gratification. Just as he gives the example, just as the fire cannot be extinguished by giving fuel to the fire. Just as we all always say that if you want to extinguish the fire, it is not that fire will be satisfied with pure ghee, pour ghee in the fire. It will actually flare up. So it is not that. And the another example is given that of the itch. When there is an itch, one scratches. There is some pleasure. But as it goes on, there is some pleasure and then it becomes into a big wound. So that scratching, which gives little pleasure, cannot ultimately satisfy. So these are two statements where Krishna clearly says that we should try to control senses, and here with the plain reading of the verse, the meaning of the verse, we see that he wants sense gratification and then he will renounce the world. And therefore, this is the position, he says. So this apparent contradiction is there. And how we can reconcile? I will try to endeavor to make this presentation with your blessings. When Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, what he says is perfect. And whatever Yadu says, we have to see in the light, in the spirit in which it is said. Because Krishna cannot be wrong and Yadu cannot be wrong. Yadu, as Prabhupada describes, is a great devotee of the Lord. And he was endeavoring for perfection, ultimately to engage completely in the devotional service of the Lord. So we have to go see the spirit of the spirit of Maharaj Yadu. So in this background, let us analyze the position of the living entity in different stages. It has been explained to us that the living entity who forgets his identity and his relationship with Krishna is engaged in self-gratification because he is in the bodily platform. And this is happening since time immemorial. In the subtle body, the propensity to enjoy is accumulated and is stored from time immemorial. And when he changes from one body to other species to other species, and this propensity is carried through the subtle body in all the species and all the bodies which a living entity gets. But when he comes to the human form of life, because of that propensity, because of higher consciousness, developed consciousness, higher intelligence, and more facilities for sense enjoyment, he actually, and more resources, he tries to increase and expand his sense gratification. And many times we see that he tries to enjoy them in a very degraded manner. So this is how the living entity in the human form of life, who has no knowledge or awareness of his real identity, who has no knowledge of his relationship with Krishna, his main object becomes the sense gratification. The purpose of life for such a person is the sense gratification. And Bhagavad Gita explains that sense gratification or sense enjoyment is the root cause of all material existence. In the material world, center of all activities, center of all activities is sex life. It has been explained because sex pleasure is considered to be the highest because it involves all the five senses. For those who are unaware definitely about the purpose of life, they engage, their whole purpose of life becomes sense enjoyment. And therefore, they miss the rare birth, human birth, by misusing it, by wasting it. So, what happens actually when the purpose of life becomes sense enjoyment, there is no awareness about the purpose of human life, then the same propensity which is still unsatisfied, because as we have discussed that lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense gratification, the same thing is carried to the next life. What changes? Nothing changes for the living entity, because anybody, he is going to do the same thing, sense gratification. So what actually changes is his dress and address. Because he gets a different dress, different species, and he got a different place to where he gets the birth. So only what changes is his dress and address. Nothing changes for that person who has no knowledge about the purpose of life. And the only object is to enjoy the sense gratification. And the other aspect of sense gratification, as here Maharaj Yadu points out, is the purpose of life was to renounce completely not only sense gratification, but also the desire for sense gratification. Because here, Maharaj Yadu wants to convey that I want to completely get rid of sense gratification as well as desires for sense gratification, because unless that is achieved, there cannot be perfect renunciation. So, but his fear was, what was his fear when he refused his father that I am not going to trade my youth with your old age, is that if he prematurely, because then he will have an old age, if he prematurely renounced the desire for sense enjoyment, then those unfulfilled desires, which are like incessant waves of the river, they will come again and again and disturb him in his devotional service. This was his fear. So, And therefore, Prabhupada explains that when we receive a human body, the desire for sense enjoyment to present in the subtle body, as I have discussed, that desire for sense enjoyment is coming from time immemorial in the form of subtle body. So when we receive the human body, also that desire is there. And Bhagavad Gita says in 259 shlok that although one may restrict himself from sense enjoyment, but the taste for the sense object remains. That there is always, if we restrict artificially without fulfilling those desires, then our taste remains. So what is the... So therefore we may conclude that Yadu was not... We may conclude that in this particular case, since Yadu had a desires for sense enjoyment, he also knew the purpose of life is to ultimately surrender to Krishna and engage in devotional service. So he was in the mode of passion and goodness, both at the same time. So one has to elevate himself to the mode of goodness to actually understand the spiritual knowledge. So therefore, Krishna has established the Varna system. Actually, Prabhupada in his, had this purport not been there, perhaps people would have been misguided, people would have misinterpreted this verse to their own advantage, that we want to enjoy life fully and then we will see for the renunciation. As we have seen that there was some so-called Bhagwan who propagated the philosophy Sambhogsa Samadhi, which was completely bogus in view of the Bhagavad Gita's teaching of Sri Krishna. So, therefore, this Varnashya system has been established by Krishna, and this indication that how we can understand the spirit of the verse, Prabhupada has given in the purport. And therefore, it is the elevation from the mode of passion, mode of ignorance to mode of passion, and from mode of passion to mode of goodness. And this is, Prabhupada says, this is the most scientific process to elevate one's consciousness to the mode of goodness. So, what is this Varnashram? Actually, dham or self-control, Prabhupada explains, is not only for the ashrams like brahmachari, vanaprastha or sannyas, but he says that it is specifically meant for grastas, householders. This self-control. As long as material body is there, the necessities of material bodies are allowed, but under strict rules and regulations. When a person enters household life, although he has a wife, he should not use his senses for unnecessary sex life, Prabhupada explains, for which proper training is actually given in the Brahmachari ashram. When persons is in the Brahmachari ashram, there is a proper training given how he can actually control his senses and remains in celibacy. But what is happening today? There is no training of the Brahmachari ashram. There is no training of the spiritual life. There is no training what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is the purpose of life. And therefore we see such a degraded population in these times. People are not aware what is the purpose. They are actually engaged in sense gratification like animals. Prabhupada explains that it is an animalistic propensity. And actually it is said that the sense enjoyment which we get in human life, we can get much higher sense gratification in other species of life, like animal life or other life. Because there are examples that if you want to satisfy our tongue, if you want to satisfy our hearing, we want to satisfy our smell, there are species of animal life which are more potent and give more pleasure. And we can see this from an episode where in connection with Pandu Maharaj, when he went for hunting in the forest and he saw some animal, he shot that animal, and actually that animal was a sage and a yogi, And since he wanted to enhance his sex enjoyment, he took the form of an animal. So we can see that in animal life we can enjoy much more than in human life. But people are making more and more sophisticated arrangements to enhance their sense gratification, and the center of which is sex life. And what we see that people, whether old or young, wealthy, they all actually engage their all resources in all these illegal, nefarious activities. So this is what we are seeing and reading every day in the paper. Why this corruption is all over? Because they want money. Because Prabhupada says that there are three aspects of sense gratification: the wealth, the prestige, and the material happiness. So from wealth they want to purchase all this material happiness, and prestige is on the platform of subtle platform, which we are not here to discuss. But actually, people try to enjoy all these three things: material, bodily senses, his wealth, and his prestige. So the Varnashram system is meant for that. And actually Prabhupada writes in the purport of one of the that under Varnashram system, sex enjoyment is allowed under license of marriage ties in regulated and restricted manner. He even writes that a relationship householder who has a relationship only with his wife is known as a brahmachari. So this is the position when a person is trained in brahmachari ashram for self-control and he leads a regulated household life, then he is like a brahmachari. This is what Prabhupada says. And there is a difference between householder life where Krishna is the center, then it is called grihastha life, and when Krishna, sense gratification is the center, they are called grahamedhi. So we are talking about here about the grihastha whose center is Krishna. The purpose is of this grihastha life is ultimately centered around Krishna, and the purpose is ultimately to renounce everything and reach to the platform of pure devotional service. So therefore Prabhupada says in the purport that how we can reconcile the what Prabhupada says in what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita and what Yadu says in this verse, that Maharaj Vadhu was very eager to engage in devotional service to the Lord, but there was one impediment. During youth, the material desires to enjoy material senses is certainly present, and unless one satisfies the lusty desires in youth, there is a chance of being disturbed in rendering service to the Lord. So, in a regulated way, in a restricted way, when one enjoys the sex life or the sense enjoyment or material enjoyment with the ultimate purpose to renounce them and to engage in Krishna service, then that, to fulfill that propensity, is actually not irreligious or is not against the tenets of Bhagavad Gita which Krishna preaches there. So, as Krishna, Prabhupada gives an example of his devotee sannyasis, that they took sannyas prematurely, and since they were affected by the incessant desires, unfulfilled desires, they fell down. So, similarly we see that in the case of Surabhi Muni, that he controlled his senses. Actually he went inside the water for meditation, but since his lusty desires were not satisfied, when he see the union between two fishes, then that lusty desire erupted and he immediately came, and he came out and married 50 daughters of Mandana king. So how we see that the desires erupt, and ultimately he was frustrated from that and he actually took shelter of Krishna. So therefore the Prabhupada says the general principle is to go through grihastha life and vanprastha life and sannyas, renouncing all attachment and material desires to this material world. So the purpose of restricted sense enjoyment and ultimately renouncing them is to engage in bhakti yoga. And Prabhupada explains that when person is in grihastha life, not grahamedi, grahastha life, then the cult of bhakti yoga, one who is trying to pursue the path of bhakti, remaining in grahastha life, enjoying their material enjoyment, actually in that case, following the bhakti mark, what happens? Prabhupada writes, the cult of bhakti yoga is so powerful that one automatically loses sexual attraction being engaged in the superior service of the Lord. Param drashta nivartate. So when one develops a higher taste of Krishna's service, then everything falls into place. He loses every interest in it. Actually, we see that many things cannot be separated from the living entity. Just like the characteristic of service, attachment, love. Attachment has to be there. Whether it has to be with the material world or it has to be with Krishna. We cannot actually get away with it. Desire has to be there. Whether it is for sense enjoyment or to serve Krishna. One cannot become desireless. So there are many things which are actually attached to the living entity. He cannot get away with it. But he can dovetail those desires or those characteristics in the service of Krishna, and then he can attain perfection. So, also Prabhupada explained that what is real renunciation? As Prabhupada explains in this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used the word niskinchana. One should have no affiliation with this material world. So Prabhupada explains in one purport that real renunciation, what is this real renunciation? One should always think himself part and parcel of Krishna. What is his constitutional position? Jiva Swarup Hoye Nitya Krishna, Krishna Nitya Das. He is the eternal servant of Krishna. He should always think like that. He is neither the proprietor, nor the controller, nor the enjoyer of anything. And therefore, he has no right to enjoy the results of his work. So when this consciousness is there, that nothing belongs to me, I am not the controller, I am not the proprietor, I am not the enjoyer, Krishna is the supreme. Everything belongs to him. He is the supreme controller, supreme enjoyer, supreme proprietor. Then automatically renunciation comes. So this knowledge has to be there. So real renunciation means to consider himself to be part and parcel of Krishna, eternal servant of Krishna, and that whatever he achieves by his work, that he wants to surrender to Krishna. He don't want to enjoy that work. So this is actual renunciation. Therefore, he becomes unattached to anything of this material world. So this is how niskinchana we can feel that. And we feel that throughout Bhagavatam, there we 80%, 90% is about grahastha devotees who have perfected their life. Many are about kings, and they were pure devotees of the Lord. What was their qualification? They were niskinchana. They knew that he was given this work as a king to rule the public, to rule his subjects, and give them Krishna consciousness. He was Krishna conscious himself. He was not attached to the opulence. Whatever provided by the Lord, in the regular course, he was just enjoying that. And the main thing was that he was not attached. What bounds us into the material world is attachment. And what frees us from the material world is detachment from the material sense gratification and anything of this material world. So this is the difference between the person who are karmis and who are in the devotional life. They are attached to this material world, they are attached to sense gratification, and the devotee is detached from all this and attached to Krishna. So this is how we can reconcile this. So just in this connection only, I want to quote one example. I was told that there once Srila Prabhupada's disciple was giving a discourse here in Bhagavatam, and a devotee asked him that many times it happens that when we go for preaching or we go on the street, we saw billboards, very provocative billboards, So what is our situation? We don't want to see it. We by chance or innocently saw it. So what is our proposition? What is our position? And then he replied that when you go and first see it, it is not your fault because it is there and you are going and naturally you have to see it. So you are innocent. But when a desire appears in your mind that I want to get some rush and enjoyment out of it, then you are guilty. And you can even stop at the first point, you can stop at the second point, but even more you want sense gratification from that particular thing, then he says you become a victim. So everything starts from the thought process which generates in the mind. Therefore it is said that the center of all activities is mind. So this is, and I don't remember, but if I am right, I have read somewhere in Prabhupada's purport that sense enjoyment is concoction of the mind. Actually, there, nothing is there, but we concoct that we see certain object, we get attached to it, contemplate on it, we get attached to it, and we want to enjoy it. So everything is in the mind. It is concoction of the mind, and we create an environment to enjoy that. So it is not there, actually, but mind makes it that we want to enjoy. So it is a concoction of the mind. And therefore, for a few minutes we may discuss about the mind, because ultimately focal point of all activities is the mind, whether it is in material life or whether it is in, because ultimately all scriptures say that in order to attain the ultimate goal of life, one has to control his mind. So what is this mind? Whether it is bala or bal. Bala, as you all know, has many meanings, but what I want to, this more appropriate meaning here is that whether it is like a evil spirit, ghost. What is the function of a ghost? We have many times heard that a certain ghost, evil spirit has entered into the body of a person. Then what happens? That person forgets his own identity. He forgets who is right, who is wrong. And he just acts on the dictates of that evil spirit. And that evil spirit makes him a prison of his desires. So this is one aspect of the mind. And the other aspect is, it is bal, it is a great strength and it is great power, both physically and spiritually. In the book Journey Home by Gurudev, there is an instance where after entering India, he was in Delhi and there was a yoga conference and he went to attend one of the programs of Swami Ram. And he saw that by the power of his mind, he could move an object from the side of the wall to the center of the hall without touching. So this is physically power of the mind. But greater than that is the spiritual power. If mind becomes spiritualized, then it can make way for a living entity to go back to Godhead. So mind has a great strength physically and spiritually. So in what way we utilize it, that makes our destiny, actually. So therefore it is said in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says that the uncontrolled mind is your worst enemy, because, and what is the purpose of enemy? He make you a prisoner. And he says controlled mind is your best friend. Best friend means, great strength. He is always there to help you in times of need. So this is the, without going much into the, because much has been said in Bhagavad Gita about senses and mind, I would like to uh, discuss in a different way. What is this mind, actually? It has been explained in Bhagavad Gita that it is the product of the material energy. In Bhagavad Gita, verse 7:4, it is said that the human body is made of 8 elements, which are his separated energy. Separated energy means the external energy or the material energy. And material energy consists of the 3 modes of material nature. So this material body comes into existence by the interaction of the 3 modes of material nature. 5 consist of the gross body and 3 consist of the subtle body, mind, intelligence and false ego. So this is the subtle body. And it has been explained in Sakya philosophy that actually mind is the product of mode of goodness. It has been explained there, Prabhupada writes, it has been explained. So, and therefore when it is a product of mode of goodness, what is his natural position? His natural, normal and peaceful position is that he has a pure love of Krishna, where there is no disturbance. This is what Prabhupada says, that this is the nature of the mind. But because of influence of Kali Yuga, because of influence of time, because everything has been pulled down, the goodness comes to passion and ignorance. Therefore, mind loses its original position. And the whole effort of spiritual knowledge or spiritual effort is to bring back the mind to its original position of goodness. First. So, and there was one question asked by Sanak Kumar, who was heading all the Kumaras and sages, that people's mind are naturally attracted to material sense objects, and similarly the sense objects in the form of desires enter the mind. How to destroy this mutual relationship? People's mind are attracted to sense objects, and sense objects enter the mind in the form of desires. There is a mutual reciprocation between the two. How to destroy this mutual relationship between sense objects and mind? It is necessary for a person who desires liberation or devotional service of the Lord to cross over activities of sense gratification. So what is the process? He asked his father, Brahmaji, and Brahmaji, since he was already engaged in creation and had also mode of passion, he could not answer this question, and then approached the Supreme Lord, who appeared in the form of Swan incarnation. It is in the 11th canto. And Lord explains this point, that it is true actually that the conditioned soul are there and this mutual exchange is there, but why it happens? He says that the conditional life, in conditional life, the spirit soul artificially imposes upon himself mind and sense objects. So, because of contact with material nature, spirit soul gets contaminated. Although it is pure, it is contaminated. And because of that, he imposes artificially upon himself mind and senses, sense objects. But above mind is intelligence. And he says that intelligence can perceive the existence of the spirit soul, which is part and parcel of the Lord. And therefore, one has to develop and this spiritual soul actually is not affected by 3 modes of material nature because it is pure, part of Krishna, Satchidanand. Therefore, one first has to develop material goodness to rise above ignorance and passion. Therefore, what is the first effort? Is to rise from the platform of ignorance and passion to the material goodness. There is material goodness and there is spiritual goodness. We'll discuss. So he has to rise. And what is the process? As we read in chapter 14 of the Bhagavad Gita, there is a clear demarcation there of the things in the mode of goodness, mode of passion and mode of ignorance. So he advises that one should try to associate, he choose things which are mode of goodness and try to associate with those things. Just like what is the food he has to eat, how, what type of enjoyment he has to have, what types of game he has to play, what type of association he has to have. If you have association of persons who are endeavoring for renunciation and devotional service of the Lord, associate with them, then associating with all these things will ultimately bring him to the platform of material goodness. And that is the platform where one, it is explained, when one is qualified to understand the spiritual matters, only on coming to the platform of material goodness. So when he comes to this platform of material goodness by cultivation of his spiritual knowledge, then he can understand what is his identity in relation to Krishna, who he is, and then endeavor for, and when he becomes situated in that perfectly, who he is, what is relationship, and act according to that relationship, situated in that, then he is, transcends the material modes of nature and is situated in spiritual goodness. Transcendental goodness, that is called as Shuddha Sattva Guna. And Prabhupada says here that the devotional service can be performed only in Shuddha Sattva Guna. When he transcends the three modes of material nature, he renounces everything of the material world, is situated in transcendence, only at that stage the devotional service starts. So gradually one has to come from the lower modes to the mode of goodness, and by cultivating spiritual knowledge, understanding relationship with Krishna, acting according to that relationship, he is situated in transcendence, and then he is in Shuddha Sattva Guna. So this is the process, how he gets free himself from the mode of material nature. And then at that moment, he automatically gives up all material, gives up material mind, material sense objects, and material minds get spiritualized at that stage. And then everything of this work becomes, and then when material mind becomes spiritualized, then everything of this world becomes indifferent. He is not concerned with the things of this world. He has no attraction for the things of this world. He loses every affiliation with sense gratification, material objects, and things of the world. And Krishna gives a very beautiful example in the same chapter by citing the example of a bamboo forest. And he says that in the bamboo forest, when wind blows, there is a friction between the bamboos. And by that friction, a blazing fire erupts and it consumes the total bamboo forest. The bamboos, which were the cause of fire, actually consumes the same thing which was the cause of their birth. The fire consumes the bamboos which are the cause of their birth. Similarly, Krishna explains that interaction of the mode of goodness, three modes of material nature, actually brings about this material body, subtle and gross. So, but body comes into existence by the three modes of material nature. But if one uses the body and mind to cultivate spiritual knowledge, then such enlightenment destroys the influence of mode of material nature. The modes which have given birth to this material body, by cultivating spiritual knowledge, the same spiritual knowledge can destroy the modes of material nature and transcend him to the spiritual platform, and leaving the three modes behind, three modes of material nature. So when mind is spiritualized, then it can destroy the very cause of its existence. Just like bamboos, the fire destroyed the very cause of its existence, similarly the mind, which is the creation of material, three modes of material nature, when it is spiritualized, it actually kills the three modes of material nature, because he has risen, transcended the three modes of material nature. So this is how he explained that how mind can be spiritualized by coming to goodness and then by cultivation of knowledge. So therefore, the highest concept, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, verse 261, Tani Sarvani Sayam Yukt Asit Matpare. Prabhupada says this is the highest concept of materialization, that at one end we have to control, restrict our senses, control them, and at the other end we have to engage our mind in Krishna consciousness, in Krishna's. So this is the process. Get slowly detached from material engagements, material enjoyment, material happiness, and get attached to Krishna slowly, gradually. So how this can happen? Only through mind. When mind, by the dictate of intelligence, when he gets specialized, when he comes to the mode of goodness and then come to the mode of sattva-guna, then automatically the process works. And as Prabhupada says that bhakti cult is so potent that one who has actually started this process of bhakti, then Krishna will help to actually perfect his life. But we cannot think or expect that this I can achieve by my own efforts. This is very important, because we are not in the control. Krishna is in control. So while pursuing our spiritual life, while trying to control our senses, we have to actually pray to Krishna, please give me strength so that I can do it. We have no power in us to control. It is Krishna who can empower us to control. So we should be all the time praying to Krishna to empower us to do what we want to do in order to serve him. And we can see that Krishna can bewilder us at any moment. We also know the instance of Mohini Murti. Lord Shiva was fully in control of his senses. He has conquered his lust. Actually, he has defeated Cupid, Kamdev. But he wanted to see Krishna as Mohini Murti. And Krishna said that you will be bewildered. Don't insist. That no. He was confident that I have conquered lust, I have conquered Cupid, nothing will happen to me. And when Krishna appeared as a Mohini Murti, what happened? Parvati was standing by his side, and he became so bewildered that he started running about Mohini Murti. And Mohini Murti was running throughout the world. He was running through the sacrifices where Shivji's devotees was performing for him. And they were seeing that Lord Shiva is running after a woman and all that. But he was just bewildered. And when Krishna disappeared in the form of Mohini Murti, then Shivji Maharaj explains this very clearly, that Krishna was not shy. Actually, he was smiling. He was appreciating the Lord's potency. He was appreciating Krishna that he has so much power that he can bewilder anyone. So what I want to say, that we should not feel that we have the power to control. We have the power to attain Krishna. Only by the mercy of Krishna we can attain these things. So we should always be praying to Krishna for his mercy. And in that way, if Krishna, we can please Krishna, and Krishna is happy with our sincere endeavor, then he will certainly bestow his mercy on us. And lastly, I would like to say that in one of the recent lectures, Radhanath Maharaj said that one should be sincere, serious, and without ulterior motive. But how to achieve this? And he said that only two shlokas of Shishtashtakam one has to follow. Tranadapi suniche ne, tarurapi sashnam, amanina manadena kirtine hadari. He should feel himself lower than the blade of grass. Actually, when we understand our position as the tiny part and parcel of Krishna, what is our position? we have no control, although we try to become controllers. So we understand our insignificant position. Jiva Swarup Hoye Krishna Diya. We are the eternal servant of Krishna. And we should be in the mood of servant of the servant of the servant. Gopil Bhartur Patkam Yor Das Das Anudas. So if we are in this mood of humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than trees. Trees are tolerating so many things. So we become more tolerant, always respecting others and expecting no respect for ourselves. Then that is Kirtaniya Sadahari. Then that is the process where we can always think of Krishna. So in order that we are not deviated from our path, we have to follow this verse very sincerely. And secondly, he says that na dhanam na najam na sundarim kavitam va jagdish kamye. Then he says that I don't want material wealth, I don't want high birth, I don't want beautiful women, I don't want prestige in the form of followers. So this is what we have to be detached. And then we can serve Krishna janam janamant. Man jamnan janmishare bhakta bhakti ehatu kitvai. And there should be no motivation for this. So we have to, if we this try to imbibe the principles of these two shlokas in our life, then we can attain Krishna's mercy, and with Krishna's mercy we can attain the perfection of life. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
If there are any questions or comments, or so I'll try to answer them. Yes, Prabhu. Please, a little louder. His question is that sometimes we desire material wealth in order to serve Krishna. Actually, there is no impediment for devotional service. Even devotional service can be performed with mind. So, if the desire to serve Krishna with money is pure, only for that purpose and not an excuse for our own sense gratification, then Krishna will perfect the desire. Because Krishna says, then when I have mercy, I bestow them money so that they can have a good life, luxurious life. But if they misuse it, then I take it all. This is my great mercy. So if we have a right concept or right prayer or right consciousness to demand mercy, the money to serve Krishna, then Krishna may bestow that benediction. But if the desire is to enjoy senses in the name of, because generally there is a very thin line between the two, we always say that I want to use the car for Krishna service, for coming to a temple, but we use for many, many ways, not connected with Krishna. So sometimes it becomes an excuse. So ultimately the purpose is that we may have the kingdom of the world, but the question is whether we are attached to it or not. If we are not attached to it, then everything is perfect. You can own the kingdom of the world. There is no problem. But the whole problem which binds us to the material world is attachment to that. If we are unattached, we can have anything. We can use in Krishna service, we can use in anything. But if we are attached to it, then everything gets spoiled. Then we are again bound by this material world. So,
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Yeah, I understood. Like, we should not have that conception that we should use it for our own sense gratification. And there is another case, like there is another question, like when we are practicing Krishna consciousness, Krishna tests, like there is a Maya Devi, the external energy of Krishna, she tests us. She offers some kind of sense objects to enjoy the sense gratification. And so sometimes it's so powerful that we are trying to avoid it, we become the victim, like, you know, that happens. So sometimes then we become, like, you know, very disgusted, like we're practicing spiritual life, and then it completely becomes moroseness and it's discouraged in the path of Krishna consciousness. So what we should do in that situation?
Actually, we have been told many times that Krishna never tests us before our capacity, beyond our capacity. But we actually can bear Krishna test up to that extent. So, these impediments which come in the spiritual life, they can be stumbling blocks or they can be stepping stones. It is our effort. And if we are clear and very sincere about our goal of life and we want to pursue it in any circumstances, that Krishna gives that strength. Secondly, I have heard Brij Bihari Prabhu was telling in our regional council meeting that Radha Gopinath Prabhu was telling Ahetuki Apriti Hata. Devotional service should be continuous and should be unmotivated. So one thing pertains to material outside ourselves, this environment, and one is pertains to our heart or internal. So Ahetuki Apriti Hata means continuous service to the Lord. So there may be material impediments which are coming. So we have to sincerely and very praying to Krishna in all. We cannot actually, something comes, we cannot on our own strength can do it. We have always to pray to Krishna to actually pass those impediments. So this Ahetuki Apriti Hata means that whatever impediments come in our way as to stop us from our continuous service to the Lord. So we have to cross them if we want to continue. Apratyahata, continuous service to the Lord. And secondly, Maharaj says that when we have clear object in life and we pursue it without deviation, then this is integrity. There may be truthfulness, there may be honesty, there may be integrity, there are seems to be same. But truthfulness is about saying something true. Honesty means in dealing with others and all that, there is honest, the honesty is there. But integrity is that we will not leave it at any cost and pursue it. Our Krishna consciousness, Maharaj says this is integrity. So we have to be feel that we are loyal to Krishna, we have to do it and Krishna will help it. And Ahetuki means there should be no motivation. It is a matter of heart. We may have so desires, so many desires. So when we are actually pursuing Krishna consciousness, we should not have any desires of our own sense gratification. So that may be an impediment for devotional service. So we should get rid of all the desires, na dhanam, na dhanam sundarim, like that, and not attached to this material world. So these two impediments, one is external, one is internal. So we have to cross over both these things sincerely and Krishna will help. Nobody actually, we are just trying. There are so many impediments. We are full of material desires. And when a person like me reads this shloka, I think it is a license to enjoy. Let us enjoy now and then we'll see in future renunciation will come. So it is not like that, actually. We twist the things, misinterpret the things to suit us and justify it. We may say that, oh, I am enjoying because I have to satisfy my lust. And unless I do it, there can be no renunciation, perfect renunciation. We can justify on the basis of the shlok, but we have to understand the spirit of the shlok. What Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in coordination with that, in consonance with that, so that there is no contradiction. So it is all our mental thing. And if we make it, actually take shelter of Krishna, pray to Krishna, we see then the life of devotees throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, so many impediments were there. So many impediments. But why they are glorious? Because they, with the help of Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna, depending on Krishna fully, they crossed over everything. So we are, as for myself, I can say, very neophyte stage, just trying to do what actually our Guru Maharaj has instructed us. So that is all. And actually, the four directive principles is the basis of our austerity, renunciation. Whatever these four regulatory principles have been given to us, they are no doubt on gross platform, but they are the basis on which we have to build our renunciation. We have to restrict our senses. We have to guide our senses by mind, intelligence, that it is not proper. And then we can proceed. So these four regulatory principles are actually the starting point for our renunciation. And as we go progress, not these four, but there are many regulations may be there, ultimately to perfect our life. So we have to take guidance from Srimad Bhagavatam, from the acharyas and all that, for that. Is that? Anybody? Yeah. Not. आप आगे आ जाइए या तो
आपने आज लेक्चर में माइंड के ऊपर बहुत ज्यादा स्ट्रेस किया तो प्रभुपाद जी भी कोई जगह पर कहते हैं मतलब मनुष्य नाम कारण बंधन मोक्ष जैसे मन मनुष्य का बंधन का भी कारण और मोक्ष का भी कारण है और भगवान कृष्ण भी गीता में कहते हैं मई अर्पित मनोबुद्धि तो आज अपने माइंड के ऊपर जो इतना स्ट्रेस दिया है तो हमको समझ में आया कि भगवत गीता में भगवान ने क्यों कहा था ऐसा
थैंक यू
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for a class filled with distilled realizations. I have one doubt. Prabhupada was mentioning about one's qualification to enter into a sannyasa ashram, that one has to be free from the desire to enjoy, the propensity to enjoy. So in that case, I would like to know who is really qualified to enter into a sannyasa ashram, bypassing the grihastha ashram. Because the desire to enjoy, I guess that it is there in everyone. So for that reason, if one enters into grihastha ashram, is there any hope that someday he will reach a conclusion that, okay, I don't have any more propensity to enjoy, and then he goes into a sannyasa ashram?
You are asking for a grihastha. Is it possible?
Yeah.
Actually, varnashram system, Prabhupada explains, is only for this. Grihastha ashram means one who has made Krishna is the center of his life. So that grihastha ashram is meant to cultivate the devotional service of the Lord. At the same time, just fulfilling his unfulfilled desires, because that may cause disturbance if he goes to varnashram, vanaprastha or sannyasa ashram. Because this sex life or sense gratification is allowed only in this vanaprastha ashram, this grihastha ashram, neither in brahmacharya nor in vanaprastha nor in sannyas. So why there is a gap between sannyas and grihastha? Because there is a period where again these desires may be there, but he has to control them. So this period of 25 years in between is given, that they live, husband and wife live together, but there is no relationship between them. They jointly serve Krishna. So slowly, slowly the elevation is there. So living together and controlling their sex desire or senses actually gives them the power to control them when they reach the stage of sannyas. So it is a gradual process. And people who are in brahmacharya ashram and not actually going to the grihastha ashram, they have power to control. They don't need this grihastha ashram. They by their intelligence, they understand that this is futile ultimately. So why go through this and spend so many 25 years of life wasting, actually delaying Krishna consciousness or perfection? So they directly go to it. So you can count them on numbers, maybe 0.00001% or maybe less than that. But all others who are leading a normal life should go through this process. And this process, how many goes? Mansuram Shahastrashu, Kishtis and Siddhe. Who are interested in Krishna consciousness? 99.9% are still involved in the sense gratificatory processes. So those who are in, who has understood the goal of life and are trying to pursue it, they are very, very rare. Prabhupada says it was in Sahasrashu, it was thousands in Dwapar Yug, but now it is maybe lakhs and lakhs and lakhs in Kali Yug. After lakhs and lakhs and lakhs, one will try to endeavor to pursue Krishna consciousness. So those who are in this Krishna consciousness life, the Varnashram, for everybody except those who are in Krishna consciousness, Varnashram has no meaning. Their total life is just a life of animalistic life. Neither they are in Brahmacharya ashram, neither Grihastha ashram, because eat, drink and be merry. And actually be merry, not remarry. What is happening today? They are marrying and divorcing. We see in papers that so and so, such and such person is now getting married 9th time or 7th time and all that. So the sense gratification becomes the only purpose of life. So this, all this is for those who are pursuing a spiritual life. This guidance is for those. And ultimately those who are actually very fortunate comes into contact of a devotee, and by the mercy of the devotee and Krishna, some good senses prevail on them and they try to come to this spiritual life. So we are not, whatever we are seeing in this world is just animistic life. They are not concerned what is morality, immorality, illegality, exploitation. Everything is happening just for sense gratification. So this is actually, and therefore in ISKCON, whenever a brahmachari wants to take the position, aspire for a sannyas ashram, then there is a 5 years period of observation for them, that whether they can actually qualified in that period, because they are observed by their behavior, by their externals and what is happening. So it is not easy, because sannyas is not recommended in Kali Yuga, because nobody will be able to do it easily. So it is a very, very difficult process. Actually, it is a civil death, as we say, cutting all relationship with this material world, or no material desires, no material enjoyment. So it is a very high stage, and therefore it should be accepted only by those who can actually control their senses, control their mind, who has no attachment to this material world. So it is, otherwise it will be a just artificially trying to become a sannyasi by appearance, but in their heart they are carrying so many desires to enjoy. So it is not so. It is better to have a grass life and try to control in a restricted manner and pursue Krishna consciousness. Perhaps that may be much better than artificially becoming sannyasi, having so many desires. So that is just a pretense. Then we say that. So, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.